Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this week's edition of The Advisors on the Next Stage Business Radio Network, designed to bring you quality information, resources, and advice to keep your business moving in the right direction. Now, here's your host.
Welcome to the premiere of The Advisors on the Next Stage Business Radio Network, and along with being the premiere of our first program, it is also the official launch of the Business Radio Network. So we're very excited to kick things off today. And, of course, I'm your host, Pamela Muldoon, ready for the next step of our media journey. And thank you so much for tuning in and coming along for the ride. We're very excited to be a part now of the Next Stage Business Radio Network. And just a couple of housekeeping items as we get started, because I want to make sure that you have ample opportunity to connect with our network, with our advisors, and, of course, as we have guests that come on the show. So to stay on top of programming and news and information, always go to our website. It's nextstagebusinessradio.com. And, of course, we can also be found on all the social media applications, Facebook, which is facebook.com/NSB Radio Network. And we're also on Twitter. Of course we're on Twitter. NSB Radio Network is also the Twitter handle. So if you're tweeting or retweeting as we go about the conversation today, or you want to share the radio network to your followers, also remember, if you would, to add our hashtag. Our hashtag is NSB Radio Network, and so we want to get that going on Twitter as well. So we're very excited. We also have our very own iTunes channel set up, so I want to make sure that if you are on iTunes that you check us out. Just simply search for Next Stage Business, and you should find us. Of course, nextstagebusinessradio.com also has all of that information, so be sure to check us out. Subscribe so that you can stay on top of the programming and not miss a single program. So here we go. I'm ready to kick off if you are. And, of course, today we're going to start the advisor show with one of our top advisors, our legal advisor. And, of course, it's Jeff O'Brien. He's with Mansfield Panikin Cohen. He is a business attorney, also a real estate attorney with the firm. And he is going to talk to us today about why the heck do you need a business attorney? Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Always good to have a conversation with Mr. O'Brien. We always learn a little bit and, of course, have a good time.
That's right.
Right? That's what it's all about. So, well, let's start there. We're going to actually start breaking this question down, but let's start at the beginning of why the heck do you need a business attorney? Why would I, as a small business owner, actually need to hire someone like you?
Well, it's a question, Pamela, that we get over and over and over again. And I think a lot of business owners out there, you know, business owners are smart, and they're in a lot of, you know, economy's tight, and they're trying to do things on shoestring budgets. And when you look at attorneys, some people look at us as a commodity, right? Well, they just draft me some documents that, you know, I don't really want to pay a lot, you know, hundreds or thousands of dollars for a pile of paper when I can just go to the internet or go to some other, you know, go to LegalZoom or some other canned forms place and get all this stuff. And the fact of the matter is that our experience is the businesses that look at us as a trusted advisor, as a relationship, the way we look at our clients as relationships, those clients tend to do better and have less expensive problems down the road than if spending what in the grand scheme of things ends up being a nominal or minimal amount at the outset, setting, you know, doing some of the things we're going to talk about today and getting things off the ground.
Well, so basically what you're saying is it's a proactive initial measure. I mean, it's kind of like buying insurance.
A little bit.
I mean, you've really got to spend a little bit to save a lot more on the back end. And, you know, you and I have a fun relationship, and I call, you know, my legal part of my business my necessary evil.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah, we're a little bit like going to have your, actually in the healthcare context, it's a little bit like going to the doctor for your annual checkup every year.
Sure.
Instead of waiting to be rushed to the ER.
Right, and the ER is very expensive.
Exactly.
Well, and we're going to talk about today, I mean, you know, it sounds pretty basic, you know, like you said, small business owners, people in business, we're smart people, but we also have a lot of challenges around keeping those expenses under control.
Right.
So, of course, you become part of the expense column,
right,
and a necessary one, and unfortunately, sometimes because you weren't proactive, it becomes extremely expensive. Sometimes it can hurt your business to the point where you have to close up shop.
Right, and that's no fun for the attorney either, too.
Yeah.
You know, some attorneys make some comment that bad news for the client is good news for the attorney. It's really not like that. I mean, we don't like having clients that end up losing their businesses because they didn't, you know, because we weren't there, it didn't come to us at the outset.
Right.
You know, our goal is always to have, it's easier for us to have long-term client relationships, and when clients are dropping because they didn't take our advice, that's no good for us either.
Right. Retention. I mean,
exactly.
My guess is that your clients also become friends. You know, these are relationships
yep.
you're building, and you're watching them grow. So, of course, your success is also somewhat built on their success.
Right.
Yeah. So
that's exactly right.
Let's start at the beginning of the process, because I know a lot of small business owners. I personally work with a lot of small business owners, and there's a lot of miseducation, and I think just simply non-education around the basic sense of why would I need to form an entity with my company, especially when it's, like you said, there's some less expensive alternatives to starting a business.
Right.
So let's start there. What are some of the reasons why do I have to form an entity? And then we're going to talk about some of those entities today.
Well, Pamela, forming an entity really is, if there's any no-brainer in business law and the advice I give out, it's this one. Because when you set up an entity like a limited liability company or a corporation, you shield your personal assets from your business liabilities. So you set these things up so that your house isn't at risk, so that your cars aren't at risk, so that your, you know, whatever assets you have personally aren't at risk in the business. What's at risk in the business is the money you put into it, the time and the money you invest in your business.
Right.
And it's limited to that. That's what when you say a liability limiting entity, that's what that means. Your liability is limited to what you put into the business. It's not any of the personal assets that are in your own name.
Right.
If you set these up right, if you paper them right, and operate them right, your personal assets should not be at risk in your business venture.
Well, and that's, you know, that's again, it's an important piece to consider, but a lot of us don't consider it until it's too late or something happens. And so, of course, we're going to talk about some of the bad stuff,
because, yep.
you know, sometimes the bad stuff is a great way to educate us on why. But, of course, if there is a situation where a customer sues us or someone else in the business sues us, by setting things up properly, we're saving ourselves from maybe total bankruptcy or, you know, personal, like you said, personal liability in the courtroom.
That's right. Yeah, there's a lot of business owners out there that operate as a sole proprietorship, or they have an assumed name or what they call a DBA from the Secretary of State.
Right.
That doesn't shield your personal assets from any liability from the business. If there's a lawsuit, something happens, you're going to be sued personally because all you have is a doing business as named DBA. You don't have that shield operating that an entity provides you.
So let's talk about some of the entities. We'll go deeper on some than others, and we'll explain why. But let's just talk about some of the basics. What are the basic entities, the ones that we as business owners tend to hear about or see on the Internet?
Well, you know, stepping back a little history lesson here from Jeff, I use that old law school education now.
There you go. Get your money's worth.
10 years since I graduated, but I'll use a little bit of it. In the old days, there was partnerships and there was corporations.
Right.
Partnerships, you'd have all the profits and losses would flow through to the individual partners. There wouldn't be some separate level of tax, but all the partners were personally liable for the obligations of the partnership.
Okay.
Corporation, there was a separate level of tax. You paid taxes. The corporation would pay taxes on its income, and then shareholders would pay tax on dividends they received. So there was double taxation, but you had the liability shield.
Okay.
Over time, that distinction has been obliterated. There's about 5 different forms of partnership. There's 2 different forms of corporations, and then a little over 30 years ago, we had this beast that came into existence called the limited liability company.
Mm-hmm.
It looks a lot like a corporation in terms of the operational sense, but for tax purposes, it's a partnership. So both the most common entities we see today are what's known as the Subchapter S Corporation. It's named that because of the subchapter of the Internal Revenue Code which gave it life.
Okay.
And the Limited Liability Company. And the similarities between those two are there is no separate level of tax, so it's passed through to the owners of the business, and both of those you have a liability shield over your personal assets. And that's a common misunderstanding, Pamela. I get a lot of people say they want to form an S corporation, and the first thing I ask them is why, and they say, well, because I want to shield my personal assets. An LLC and an S corporation have the same liability shield.
Okay.
No difference there. It comes down, the reason you choose one or the other is some tax things. our accounting advisor, Pam Ricker, and I have already talked, and we'll probably come back another time and talk a little bit more about those tax differences
right.
in a little bit in depth. That's probably an hour unto itself. But S-Corps and LLCs are the dominant entities being used today.
Well, and also I think, you know, even though our programming is meant for businesses of multiple sizes in terms of what a small business really means, you know, a lot of times when you're with a small or a micro business, one or two person shop, there's a, or even like we'd mentioned at the beginning, a sole proprietorship versus the LLC or the S Corp. I mean, these are conversations I think we want to make sure we understand that regardless of size, we need to be having these conversations
Absolutely.
For protection.
Absolutely.
Right? So let's start then with the one that is the most, that we're hearing probably more about in the last few years because there have been some changes and some modifications, and that is the LLC, which is known as the Limited Liability Company.
Yep.
So let's break that down.
Well, the LLCs were actually invented in Wyoming in about 1977 was the first LLC. And long story short, the IRS recognized it. They started being used. They were only being used with multi-owner businesses because the IRS was classifying them as a partnership for tax purposes.
Okay.
And how could you have a partner with yourself?
Right. Well,
so for a long time...
Have you ever talked to a small business owner? We have multiple personalities. Apparently they didn't bring the psychology of that into the conversation.
They did not. They
I
did
digress.
Not. No.
Yes.
So they had... So if you were a single owner business, if you were going to form an entity, you would go with the S Corporation.
Okay.
Well, a few years back... The IRS changed some regulations and allowed single-member LLCs. And what they said was that these LLCs were disregarded for federal income tax purposes. They also, so we could call them now disregarded entities. What that means is in terms of tax reporting, a single-member LLC, the income, the profits and losses from a single-member LLC get reported on your personal income tax return on a schedule.
Okay.
There is no separate return, which is a big consideration for a small business that
yes.
might be worrying about filing separate returns and whatnot. It's basically a sole proprietorship with a liability shield is what a single-member LLC is.
Which is extremely important.
Exactly, which makes it all the more of a no-brainer why you wouldn't set something up like that, okay?
Okay.
So the LLCs are noted for being flexible in structure, and we'll talk in a minute about the S Corporation as a difference, but you can have multiple classes of membership interest, what they call it, called an LLC.
Okay.
Some can be voting, some can be non-voting. You can have different rights. Someone might get a preferred return. Some may not. All those different things. You can allocate the voting rights and the profits however you agree on in a written agreement. Okay, so someone may have 50% voting rights but 30% profits. You
okay.
can do that in an LLC.
Okay.
S-Corps,
okay.
it's pro rata based on what you put into it. Okay?
Okay.
Someone could put in... You know, for whatever reason, someone could put in $100, someone could put in $1,000 in an LLC, and they both could be 50% owners.
Oh, okay.
Okay. That's
interesting.
Different.
So that flexibility is very, very key to this particular entity.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. If there's any drawback to an LLC, it comes down to, like I said, this tax issue, the self-employment tax issue. An LLC owner pays full self-employment tax, doesn't get to take advantage of some minimization techniques that's available in S Corporation, but... Those are the regulations as they are now, as we'll talk about when Pam and I are back together. Those might be changing, so there might not be that distinction anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
Keep me posted, would you? Please?
We will. We will.
Because it is. But, again, if you are proactive, whether it's setting the entity and, of course, you know, you're going to hear us throughout this journey that we're going with our advisor show is talking about the multiple advisors that you truly need on your team. And, of course, Jeff here is referring to our CPA advisor, Pam Ricker. Her company is Ricker & Associates. And as a CPA advisor, obviously, anytime you're starting up a company, you really want to get the two of you connected early on.
Absolutely.
Is what you're saying
as
well.
When it comes down to forming the entity and the choice of entity, the CPA and the attorney need to be in that conversation with the client at the same time.
Yeah. It can make these proactive tax decisions as well as the other pieces to the puzzle of, in terms of what the entity brings for that limited liability
Absolutely.
Piece.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned, and because of the tax piece that we're going to talk more with Pam in a future episode, we're going to go into detail, but because we did bring it up and do a little comparison, let's do a little comparison with the S-Corp versus the LLC from a legal perspective.
Sure. The S-Corporation is different. I mean, same thing. The similarities are you still get a liability shield, still pass through taxation. The difference is It's a little bit more rigid and restrictive in terms of how it operates and who can own shares in an S corporation.
Okay.
Okay. You're limited, I believe, at 75 shareholders. Okay. You can have 100,000 if you wanted to an LLC. Why you'd want an LLC
right.
with 100,000 people? I don't know, but you could.
Again, it's a flexibility.
Right. Right. It's not an automatic, you know, election to be an S corporation. You have to make an affirmative election. You have to file a form with the IRS to say I want to be taxed as an S corporation. That's one of the common mistakes that I see a lot. Some people make is they'll file their articles. They'll get their tax ID number from the IRS and they put down S corp on their tax ID application form and think that they've made the election. No,
and
it's a separate form.
So they're still liable under that personal
unless they've gone
through this process.
They're not liable. What they've done is they've created what they call a C corporation, which is the one that has the double tax.
So they paid Uncle Sam more money is what they're
exactly,
going to be doing. Okay.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Exactly. And
gotcha.
They're usually paying their attorney more money because
right.
we then have to immediately dissolve that entity and start over again. And do it right and make the S election.
And this
so,
goes back to the proactive versus
exactly,
the reactive.
Exactly.
Right? Absolutely.
Exactly.
Okay.
So you have to make an election. It has to be within a certain period of time after the business starts. All the shareholders in the S corporation have the same rights. So there's none of this voting, non-voting. I'm going to put in 100. You're going to put in 1,000. We're going to own the same. It's much more rigid in terms of its structure and what you can do with it.
Okay.
All the reason why LLCs are becoming more and more in vogue, and S corps are kind of pigeonholed into. If there's a specific reason to use it, you use it. The S corporation. This we get into the self-employment tax. The S corporation assumes that there is a president of the corporation.
Okay.
And they have to pay the president a salary. So you can pay yourself a salary as president, and you'll pay FICA and Medicare tax on that, and then there's some tax minimization for draws you take on profits above the beyond your salary.
Okay.
We'll talk a little bit more with that with Pam. She knows it better than I do. I know enough about that to be dangerous.
Yes.
Which is why I involve her in the conversations when we have the discussion of which entity forms. It's more of a tax decision than a legal decision.
Well, and that makes a lot of sense, and it's just a little bit of information at the beginning so that you can save yourself some, you know, while you're spending a little bit of money, saving money. At the same time, you know, you mentioned with the limited liability company, there is now a solo version of that,
yep.
or a single owner version of that, again, which is something that's fairly new in terms of the entity piece as well.
Yeah, new in the legal sense. It was about 1997. So when you still have attorneys out there that talk about using S corps instead of LLCs
right.
because they're new
yeah.
and they were only created in 1977 for some people, that's
right.
new.
Right. And we're what, 2010? Is that 2010? But I think that's really important because, again, going back to regardless of size, making the decision, one, needs to include the attorney, and also, two, needs to include the CPA. And, of course, through those two advisors, you're going to make the best decision at that point in time in your company.
Right, because choosing the entity, deciding to form an entity, and choosing what type of entity has implications for your asset protection as well as tax issues. So that's why you have to have both of us at the plate discussing this. At the outset.
Well, and you know, like Stephen Covey says, work with the end in mind, right? So,
right.
you know, we'll also be doing some estate planning discussions as we move through our journey with the advisor show. And,
mm-hmm.
and these are all the pieces to the puzzle when you're starting as much as you possibly can to have those conversations. So we've set up our entity, S Corp or LLC. We'll just, you know, kind of stay on that path of those two. Let's talk about some of the... some of the reasons, let's get some details. What are some of the things or items that are involved in this entity process?
Well,
what do I get?
Well, Pamela, when you come to an attorney like me to put together your entity, you're going to get a package of documents depending on what entity you select.
Okay.
Or what entity we decide on, I should say. They are very similar. It's a little bit of nomenclature difference, especially in Minnesota where the corporation statute and the LLC statute are patterned off each other, okay? And they were deliberately done that way.
Okay.
So when you have an S corporation, what you get is you have articles of incorporation, and that's the document that's filed with the Secretary of State that says what's the name of the business, where is the registered office, who's the registered agent, and there's some default provisions that the statute, the corporation statute lists that you can opt into or opt out of in those articles. And that's the public document, okay?
Okay.
And that gets filed with the Secretary of State. Then you have the bylaws, and the bylaws talks about meetings of shareholders and meetings of the board of directors and how different things are elected and how you have special meetings and the different officer titles and what they do. And there's some emergency provisions in there, so in case there was a terrorist attack or something, how the company could meet if they couldn't all be in a room, all the officers of the board couldn't be in a room together.
Okay.
Those kinds of things. And then you get into, you know, your corporate resolutions, your tax ID application. It's an IRS form called the SS4. And then with an S corporation, there's also another IRS form that gets filed called a 2553. That's the S election form. And there's some information that has to be provided on there and filed within a certain period of time.
And that's what you were referring to when you say you have to actually elect.
That's correct. Yes.
Okay.
Writing
S corp.
Yeah, writing it down as S corp on the SS4 is not a sufficient election. There, fortunately, the IRS has some safe harbor, some kind of corrective measures now. It takes time, costs money.
Okay.
It's just easier to do it right up front.
So they just don't automatically start going down a path of a C corp with you. I mean, they actually
they will go down the path of a C corp unless you somehow file. You can file a late election and basically plead ignorance.
Okay.
Nobody wants to beg for mercy in front of the IRS. It's just easier to
not.
Do it right up front.
Yes.
The other document, if you have a multi shareholder corporation, is something known as the shareholder control agreement. Now, there's a lot of tax things in there. What a lot of people focus on is the fact that usually, like you know, we do when we draft those, is we have buy sell provisions in that document that talk about certain triggers as someone tries to sell their shares to somebody else, or has to file bankruptcy, or has a lawsuit, a judgment against them, and a creditor's trying to take their shares, or if they're getting divorced, or if they die, or if they're disabled. All these different triggers that allow the company or the other owners to buy that interest out so that they basically are doing business with who they intended to do business with.
So, again, we're talking about a proactive measure, and these are things we don't necessarily want to have conversations about, but we really do. And so, you know, there's a lot of small business owners that go down this path of family-owned business, maybe really good friends that start a partnership, and, you know, there's the handshake and, you know, and a smile that says, hey, we're good friends or we're family. I don't know what you're talking about, Jeff. We aren't going to have any issues. Is that something that I should be concerned of if I'm going down that path as a business owner?
It is, unless you ultimately want to be paying an attorney a lot of money to try to – the only one person that wins when you have shareholder fights or member fights, if it's an LLC, and there's no buy-sell in place, and so there's a fight over valuing it and who gets what, and there's all these things thrown back and forth as this is why you're wrong and this is why I'm right and all these kinds of things.
It's amazing how those conversations, how the reality affects people. Like, they think they're never going to have these conversations. But
right.
The reality is everyone has a family to feed or certain goals and visions of how they see something, and life can change pretty quickly.
That's right. Everybody starts out their business with certain expectations. When those expectations aren't being met,
right,
then they start thinking, why aren't they being met? And then finger pointing happens. You're talking five figures of attorney's fees to try to settle an ownership dispute. I've been patting myself on the back. I've had a few clients this year where I've had to have some partnership breakups, and I've got a streak going, I think, six or seven in a row where, fortunately, it was all amicable. The parties were able to agree and, you know, agree amongst themselves, and we simply prepared a set of documents for them to memorialize their agreement.
Okay.
That's good. That's great. I'm so happy. That's probably my proudest thing of the whole year, was able to resolve those without any kind of litigation. But when they do go south and they do go into court, it's really, really expensive.
Yeah.
So if you're a multi-owner business, very important to have that buy-sell agreement as part of your initial package of documents.
And sit down and be honest with each other and lay things out. And I would assume that part of your role, Jeff, is to kind of lay out some what-if scenarios at the beginning.
Yep.
So that you can open up that conversation.
I will sit down with the business owners together, and I will talk. I liken the buy-sell agreement to a business prenuptial agreement. And I will ask them, who do you intend to do business with? Do you want to be doing business with your partner's spouse or ex-spouse or children or a creditor or a bankruptcy trustee? And the answers usually are no. We want to do business together. Well,
yeah.
That's why you create some mechanisms to to set that up. So that's everything on the S corporation side. The LLC looks very, very similar. It's really, like I said, it's really only nomenclature. Instead of articles of incorporation, you have articles of organization. Bylaws, some people call them bylaws for an LLC, some people call them operating agreements. They're the same thing. The procedures for how the owners have meetings, how they elect a board. In an LLC, they have a board of governors rather than a board of directors and managers instead of officers. It's the same darn thing.
Okay.
There's LLC resolutions. There's, instead of a shareholder control agreement, it's called a member control agreement. Still has the buy-sell provisions, has all the tax niceties. And then there's the SS4, which is the application for the tax ID number. So the stack of paper looks very similar for both of them. There's some name changes, and there's some provisions, obviously some specific provisions different based on what we talked about earlier in terms
right.
of the difference of structure.
Right.
But in the end, you get a little binder of documents, and they look kind of the same, and it's your kind of your rules of the road for operating your business from the legal standpoint.
So you've got your initial documents in place. You're going to register either as an S-Corp or an LLC. You're going to get that documentation to the state, so you know this is an official, quote-unquote, official business.
Yep.
And you've got the stamp of approval of the attorney that says, yes, you're good to go. And but that's really just the beginning.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, and one last thing on the entity thing before we
yeah.
leave that. In terms of one of the mistakes that I see being made when it comes to, you know, there's always the DIY crowd, right? And I always say that
right.
DIY typically leads to SOL. There is a one-page form of Articles of Incorporation and a one-page form of Articles of Organization on the Secretary of State's website. It is the bare minimum that you need to form an entity.
Right.
You
right.
pay, you know, $160 filing fee, and you file this, and you get it done. I mentioned before there's some opt-in, opt-out things that are in those two statutes, the corporate statute and the LLC statute. That one-page form doesn't take into account those provisions. That's where the difference is between a business attorney and that form, is we'll talk through some of those things, give you some contextual advice, and give you a fuller set of articles than what you'd get online.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up, because obviously there's some very well-meaning and wonderful organizations that as a business owner or someone looking to start your business, we can go to, and a lot of these are nonprofit organizations, and they offer excellent advice. They've got some great folks on their staff and on their boards. But it is really important to understand that sometimes free is truly free, and you have to also look to all your options, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Right. For anyone out there that thinks that going to the Internet or using that form saves money because attorneys are expensive, believe me, especially in this economy, law firms are changing the way they set up billing for these entities. We'll talk a little bit later about our Incubation Center program. We're doing a lot of this stuff on flat fees, payment plans, a lot of different things because, like I said, it goes back to a relationship. It's not how many fees can I tag you with in year one. It's I want you with me 5, 10, 15, 20 years. So I've actually created payment plans that might have people be paying 3-4 months, you know, for an entity.
Right.
Because I would rather have them operating with an entity than to fly blind.
Right.
Because they don't want to pay the money up front.
You know, and that's really important because with the economic shift and change, we as business people have to constantly be thinking, how can I make it easier for my consumer to buy? And especially with the onslaught of the Internet, we're all a little bit of a commodity, and especially in the attorney world, you're dealing with some competitive content and information that might have a good intention but may not be the best road for that future client of yours.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So we want to make sure we're addressing some of those things. So just be very aware of when you're getting your information and your education that if you're feeling that this isn't enough, just pick up the phone, call someone like Jeff, because he's going to make sure that you get the right information. And like you said, he's also going to make sure that he's working with you, and that's a very important part of this new economic structure that we're dealing with. So well, we've got our entity started. We've got things going. We've called you, Jeff. We're part of the program. But now this is just the beginning, like we said. You've got the entity. Now you've got to actually run this little thing called a business.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So we kind of went down the path of just the member agreements, you know, who's actually owning the company. But that's really one of possibly many agreements that you could find yourself involved in.
That's right. And we talked, you know, the first part we talked about how you limit your personal assets, how you limit the risk at your personal assets from your business liability.
Right.
Now we'll talk about how you limit business liability by having
do things smart and proactive.
Yeah, and get it in, when you're doing agreements, get them in writing.
Yeah.
No wink, wink, nod, nod. No verbals. No handshakes. Get written contracts.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, people have very good well intentions. But let's talk about some of the mistakes, I guess. Sometimes the best way to learn how to do something right is to learn from some other folks' mistakes. And
yep.
What are some, I guess, common mistakes that we as people in business make when it comes to the contractual piece?
Well, just that one of the things is not getting it in writing. And then, you know, something happens and the person comes to the attorney to try to fix it. And there's certain contracts that the law requires to be in writing. Minnesota has a statute that's called the Statute of Frauds. I think all 50 states have one. There are certain contracts that are required by Minnesota law to be in writing to be enforceable. So contracts involving the sale of real estate, that's why you sign purchase agreements when you go to buy your home or sell your home.
Sure.
Sale of goods worth more than $500. Contracts that can't be performed within a year. Leases that last for longer than a year. Contracts to pay off someone else's debt, and then we get into the more the domestic side, contracts concerning a marriage, if we get prenuptial agreements, antenuptial agreements, all that kind of stuff. But that's
right.
That's kind of the non-business area. But those are the contracts that have to be in writing to be enforceable. Otherwise, you end up paying an attorney a lot of money to come up with novel theories of law to try to get you something back, and it may not always work.
Well, in a couple of the examples you gave was, you know, it sounds like that 12-month mark is kind of a benchmark in terms of leases or certain contracts. You know, so you're looking at long-term consulting contracts or those types of things, making sure that you actually have in writing how I'm getting paid, you know, just the length. Even the length, I assume, there's something involved in that to make sure that everyone's at the table.
Absolutely.
And has the same conversation.
Yep.
And even though marriage is a separate contract, you know, that's more of a domestic, obviously if you're dealing with family business, now there are a little bit of bleed over there
right.
as well, right? So
right.
make sure people have your attorney read your contract. Done, bottom line, right?
Right.
Always important. So the non-legal reasons, I want to make sure we talk about this, and we've talked about this in terms of the fees. I mean, the attorney does get paid. So
right.
There's other reasons than just the legal reasons to this, you know, getting the contract and seeing someone like you. So let's address a few of those as well.
Well, you know, you mentioned the fees, Pamela. You know, what I will do with some of my clients who, if they want to save a little bit of money and they say, well, they might draft take the first draft of the contract and send it to me, and then I edit it. And sometimes that is a lot, and sometimes it's a pretty good contract.
Yeah.
But what I say is write it up in your own words what you want to do.
Okay.
And give it to me, and I'll put it into legalese so that it has legal effect.
Okay.
And that's the one way, if you're skittish about working with an attorney, most attorneys that really want to work with small businesses and new businesses will do that. Will say, send me your contract, I'll take a look at it. I'll try to work with you. We see that a lot with non-disclosure agreements. You know, when businesses are talking to other outside parties about their business idea and they're trying to keep it confidential and keep it from being taken from them. Oh, I have this non-disclosure agreement. Usually they got it offline. Well, send it to me and I'll take a look at it and we'll spiff it up a little bit so
sure.
it's something that works.
Yep.
So don't ever I'm wide open to doing something like that. So we try to work with our clients. We're cognizant of the fact that we cost money. And we'll do the best we can to ease this thing so we have a long relationship.
Well, and I think you bring up a good point because obviously for almost any contract out there with the Internet, we can, you know, Google or type into our search browser, you know, X kind of contract and pull up templates or examples or, you know, so what you're saying in a sense is start with that as an editing point and see if
there's lots of good contracts that you can find on different sites like Nolo and some of those out there. But whether or not what the effect of using that agreement is in wherever state you are, if you're in Minnesota here, you know, using a contract as the governing law is California, not a good idea. So you want to start someplace good, but let an attorney at least look at it and give you some feedback.
Well, you mentioned the different states, and is that also a challenge that you see every so often as people are pulling information from a state outside of, you know, we are currently having this interview in Minnesota, but obviously there are a lot of things that Minnesota has on the books that California doesn't, or
right.
vice versa. So
that's
do you
exactly
see
right.
that quite a bit in the as we do our own education?
I do. In the contract sense, it usually is like that governing law clause. There'll be some reference to a statute that doesn't belong.
Sure.
Even on the entity formation side, you know, bylaws, there's different, you know, notice periods and things like that per state in their statutes in terms of their notices for meetings. And you have to be specific to your state. So, you know, that's one of the things you can easily find. I can very quickly find out if someone's using a document off the Internet because it has some voting requirement or notice requirement that Minnesota just doesn't jive with.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah, those things you do have to be careful of.
So really we're looking at you to dot our I's and cross our T's and of course, anytime you do something that's kind of a blanket document, there's some specifics that are very very connected to your industry, type
yep.
of business, if you're a service business, if you're a retail business, those types of things. So, and now, you know, we'll be talking to multiple advisors, but you hear so many horror stories of people taking this employee handbook from the retail guy and starting to use it in their service business. So, you know, they just make a copy, make a couple changes, a couple tweaks, like the name, and that's about it. And so, I'm assuming as an attorney you see quite a few horror stories where some of the good intentions have gone bad.
Yeah, computers can be our friends. They can also be our enemies, too.
Just because it's inexpensive doesn't mean it's good.
Right.
So, well, which kind of goes to, you know, one of the things we've been kind of bleeding in here is, you know, the doing-it-yourselfer or taking things off of the Internet. Let's talk a little bit about some of the things, because this is something I think a lot of business owners have done and haven't really realized, but we talked about the setting up of the entity to separate your personal and business.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to contracting, one of the common challenges is making sure that you're signing it appropriately, for example.
Let's
talk a little bit about that, why you have to be very – all levels of that contract have to truly be looked at, because when you sign on the dotted line, if something goes wrong, no matter what your entity is, that contract may actually have – some liability issues for you on a personal basis.
That's right, and that's one of the first things that I look at when someone comes to me with a draft contract is how they're signing it. If you spent the money to go through having an attorney set up an entity for you to limit your personal liability, the last thing you want to do is then counteract that by signing a very important contract that has a, you know, has liability possibilities for you in your own personal name, because now you become personally obligated for that contract performance, whereas if you had signed it as an officer of your corporation or a manager of your LLC, it would be the LLC or the corporation that would be responsible for that performance. And absent some kind of a personal guarantee, your personal assets aren't at risk as part of that relationship.
Right.
But when you sign your personal name, you just put your own neck on the chopping block.
Well, and I would think that whether you're, I mean, we've talked a little bit or mainly here in terms of preparing a contract that you, your company will use, but this is also an important area when you're receiving a contract from somebody else, that call your attorney, spend that little extra to make sure it's reviewed properly.
Right.
So that you know you're signing it under the LLC versus your personal or whatever the case is.
Right, and that's just, you know, that's just one example. I mean, words mean things. I mean, you talked about the legal reasons, like the statute of frauds for having contracts. There's a lot of practical reasons why you put your agreements in writing. I mean, everybody has their own expectations of what's going to happen with that, you know, that relationship, and having clear words and have those conversations up front, including with a third party like your attorney, to ask, I mean, if someone sends me something and I don't understand it, I'll ask questions back. Maybe we have to peel the layers of the onion back and find out what they're getting at and rework it from the ground up. We don't do that just to make money. We do that because they might be doing something that down the road may cause some legal headaches. So, you know, having, you know, going through and finding out what provisions are, what the relationship is going to be, what the you know, the level of risk. I always say I'm the type of attorney that's not just going to tell you no. I'll tell you what the risks are associated with what you're going to do. If I think it's stupid, I'll tell you that. I'll probably put it in writing to cover my butt. But as long as it's not illegal or unethical, I'll help you do your transaction the best way I know how. so, but we talk through a lot about what the business transaction is, and then we put together the contract that works for that relationship.
Well, and in anything, it's, you know, a communication issue as well. What I read on paper may mean something slightly different than what you read on paper. And so by getting both individuals' attorneys involved,
yeah,
and making sure that everybody is understanding the agreement as written.
Well, there's a lot
important.
Yeah, there's a lot of provisions that end up in contracts that the parties, they want that. The attorneys know what to look for and what's lacking in a contract. Like a key example is attorney's fees.
Sure.
By law, unless there is a statute or a contract provision that says that a party that has to sue somebody for a breach of contract gets their attorney's fees, you pay your own. That can add up really quick,
yes,
in a lawsuit.
Yes.
So having a discussion, in some cases, you know, when you have kind of a one-sided type agreement with, you know, a business-to-consumer type business, you know, maybe your lawn care person or whatever it is, you can throw a little one or two lines in there that says, if I have to sue you, I get my attorney's fees. You say it in a polite legal way, not that blunt. But things like that, having dispute resolution clauses in there so that you might have a mediation process or an arbitration process as opposed to going to court,
sure,
saves a little bit of money.
Yeah.
Those are the types of provisions that an attorney is going to suggest and be included in the contract. And then, you know, in addition to the nuts and bolts of what the actual, you know, the business transaction is.
Well, and I'm glad that we really broke down some of these different examples of contracting and setting up the entity, and of course, like you mentioned, some of the we look at these contracts and it looks like words we should care about, but we don't always connect to that. So, of course, having someone like yourself review it is going to make sure that we totally understand it, and it may make the difference between actually signing that agreement or not. Or,
right.
I mean, even if it's a contract that's used by another person, by getting my attorney involved, or in this case, guys, as you're listening, your attorney involved, maybe there's a little caveat that you could add or another, you know, a little piece of the agreement to make sure that it's still a win-win all the way around.
Right. Or there might be something in the original agreement that even though the parties agree on it, it might not be legal. You know, you talk about in the lending in context, private lending right now with the banks being tight,
right,
a lot of individual loans, and you see the interest rates, 10, 12, 13, 14%. Well, we have a usury statute in Minnesota, and it caps the amount of interest you can charge on a contract per year.
Okay.
And so I ended up, you know, I went and did a blog post called that pesky little thing called usury, because it was about a week's worth of contracts that I was, you know, rewriting because the interest was over the cap, every one of them. So things like that attorneys, I mean, who in the sense of the day thinking about what the usury laws are,
right,
in the state of Minnesota? Attorneys do.
Not necessarily me. Sorry.
No. So that's why you have an attorney to come in and advise you.
So as we're talking here, what I'm really hearing you say is that when it comes to the, I mean, this is not just someone who draws up a contract, sends you on your way. This is someone who's really, you need to sit down and talk about where your business is starting from, where you want to go. And, of course, we're going to talk about some of the other advisors that you would suggest to have on the team, of course, depending on the situation. But really, you are my legal advisor, which is, of course,
right,
when you're part of the advisor show.
That's exactly right. It's not just documents. It's contextual advice about what those documents do and giving you the right documents for your deal.
So is there, as we kind of wrap this up and go into the end part of this discussion, any little last piece of a tip or information? I mean, we've really covered a lot of ground here in terms of the LLC and the S-Corp setting up the entity, the contracting piece. What else from a legal standpoint would you, if I'm a business owner in my first year starting, that I should be considering, other than, of course, just checking in with someone like yourself?
Well, what I always tell my business clients is, you know, you're an expert in what you do. Do what you do best and let the experts do the rest. That's why, you know, our firm a few years ago created the Incubation Center, so that it's not just you're getting legal documents from us. We will help you find a CPA or an insurance agent or a financial advisor or a business banker or someone to help with your business plan so that you have those bases covered. You're not trying to do it yourself. And we all work together. It's, you know, I have my roster of advisors, many of them who are part of this show.
Right.
That I will refer my clients out to, because we're, you know, and then we can kind of, we have a mutual client and we're all working together for their best interest. That's what, in this day and age, what a good business attorney does for his or her clients is it's not just documents, it's not just advice, it's almost, I don't want to use the word partner, but in a way it's a promoter or a cheerleader for the business and a little bit of hand-holding as well. That's what we're doing when we're working with new businesses. So business owners out there, don't be afraid to contact a business attorney. The ones that get it, the ones that want to work with micro businesses, the ones that work with small businesses, closely held businesses, will do things to show that they value you just as much as you value their advice.
Well, and of course, the reason that I developed this particular program, The Advisors, is really a lot to do with what you're referring to, Jeff, is we are not an island, not only as business owners, but also in our own advisory piece.
That's right.
You can't do what you do just by yourself.
Right.
You need to bring in a Pam Ricker or Todd Terhorst, our financial planner, or the multitude of other advisors. Of course, looking into consideration where the business is at, if they're in a hiring process or a growth process or kind of backing things up, you know, are they, you know, hiring new people in the sales arena for contracting and all those different pieces. And so I'm very excited as we kick off the advisors with Jeff here that this is really the beginning of what we hope is an amazing team that we're going to be bringing to the table for you to take some advice and some tips and some information and hopefully do some things even smarter than you're already doing in your business. So as we do wrap things up today, Jeff, I just want to make sure that our audience knows how to connect with you because you're a busy guy, but there's a lot of ways for us to make sure that we know where you are.
So absolutely.
Give us some information. Of course, it's your law firm is Mansfield, Tannick & Cohen, so give us the website for that.
The website for the firm is mansfieldtannick.com. I should mention, though, that since I have smart clients like Pamela who are savvy in marketing that give me advice from time to time about branding and personal brand versus company brand, I also have my own personal website.
Very nice.
Which is jeffreyobrienesq.com. Where you can find blog posts, radio clips, articles, pretty much everything. There's a lot of free legal advice on both of those sites between me and my partners do on our own, on the firm site, and then what I'm doing on my own site. We do a lot of education-based marketing, so take advantage of those two sites and download what you can.
Lots of great content. And actually, as we build out our marketing arm for the Next Stage Business Radio Network and the advisors piece, of course, you can get a hold of all of Jeff's information as well at the advisor show page on the nextstagebusinessradio.com website. And we're going to make sure that we also have his personal web information as well as the business web because, you know, we are building relationships with our individual advisors. And as we do that, we want to make sure that you have a great way to connect with that content moving forward. And you also mentioned that Mansfield, Tannick & Cohen has the incubation program.
Yep.
So another great opportunity for a startup or someone diving into that business idea, that entrepreneurial seizure hits them. They should really make sure they connect into that program as well.
Yep, and all the information on that program is on the Mansfield, Tannick & Cohen website.
Excellent. Well, Jeff, it's been a lot of fun today, as always. Even though I've heard this conversation a few times, it's amazing. I'm always taking something away. It's, you know, when the student is ready kind of thing,
yep,
right?
Yep.
And, of course, if you have questions for Jeff, make sure you connect with either him directly as you get that contact information or check with us at Next Stage Business Radio Network. And as we wrap it up, I want to make sure and remind you that we are now, the Advisor Show is on every Friday morning. That's 10 to 11 a.m. Central Time. So regardless of where you are around the globe, make sure that you check us out. And you can always connect with us at nextstagebusinessradio.com in terms of times and details. But next week, we do have that other advisor, that CPA advisor, Pam Ricker. She is president and, of course, CPA of Ricker & Associates. We're going to talk about why a CPA, again, lots of do-it-yourselfers out there in this regard. And, you know, there comes a point where you really got to sit down with a CPA just like you do with Jeff as your business attorney. You got to have that conversation. So we're going to have a conversation with Pam as to why that's important and get the nuts and bolts and beginnings of that financial piece of your business plan in place because we want to know where you're going. So that's, of course, next Friday. That's September 17th. And we're at 10 a.m. Central Time on your radio dial, on your online radio dial. You like that, Jeff?
Yes, I do.
Awesome. Well, thanks again to Jeff O'Brien from Mansfield, Tannick & Cohen. I've been your host. I'm Pamela Muldoon. Make it a great week.
This has been a presentation of the Next Stage Business Radio Network.